Johnson, Judge Jessen, the Honorable Kevin G. Ross presiding.
Good morning. Welcome to the Court of Appeals for this interactive television component of our oral argument, January 23rd, 2019. The next case on for oral argument is case number A18995. I'm going to try to pronounce it right. Schmedeke versus All Service Plumbing. Counsel, each of you will have 15 minutes to present your argument with an additional 5 minutes to appellant's counsel if you choose to use that time for rebuttal. Please state your name as you commence each leg of your argument. Even though we're doing this on video, we are keeping track of the argument as we always do in our audio recording, so having your name attached to the argument will help us in that regard. And just so we know that you are all present for this proceeding, if you could, appellant's counsel, just say a few words, and then respondent's counsel say a few words, because our system only shows us who is present based upon a voice activation system.
Your Honor, is John Bray. Can you hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you. But okay, now we can see you. Thank you, Mr.
Okay.
Bray. And counsel for respondent, if you could say a few words so we can get you on the screen.
Nicole Winand on behalf of respondent.
Wonderful. We have all of you in view. We assume you have us in view.
Yes, sir.
Very good.
Yes, sir, we do.
All right. Counsel for appellant, whenever you are ready to proceed, you may.
Thank you, Your Honors. Counsel, Your Honors, John Bray representing the appellants. And Judge Ross, you nailed the pronunciation of the surname. It's Schmedeke.
Very good.
Well, I don't intend to take all 15 minutes unless there are lots of questions, and there may be. I think this case is fairly simple, and that it must be remanded for failure to properly apply the law, and on the notion that there may be fact issues relating to whether the failure to close bleeder valves constituted a defective and unsafe condition to the real property. Respondent ASP was contracted with to replace a boiler furnace unit at property owned by the Schmedekes. It's rental property, and they did so. Since that boiler unit has been installed, there's been nothing wrong with it. It hasn't malfunctioned, it hasn't overheated, it hasn't burned anything down. It's working exactly as it was supposed to work. The radiator and the bleeder valves. Now let me back up a bit. On November 22, 2010, the respondent's employees, after installing the boiler and furnace unit, went to recharge the system with water. And they did so. It's a water-based heating system, and the only improvement was a replacement furnace. There was no improvement to the piping or any of the radiators or the bleeder valves, which are on the radiators. Now, in this case, and I think this is important, the radiators are original to the home. They're old school up and down radiators, the kind you see in older homes. And as I said, they are original to the home. The radiators themselves have bleeder valves on them. And what the bleeder valves do is, if the bleeder valves are open, water can flow out of the bleeder valves. If the bleeder valves are closed, water is contained within the pipes and the radiators. So that is exactly how they're supposed to work. So when the respondent's employees came and refilled the system with water, they failed to close the bleeder valves and water flooded the home. In fact, the only time that respondent's employees were aware that they had failed to close the bleeder valves was when water started to flood into the basement, which is where they were, as they were standing next to the boiler unit. Now, the broad question presented here is where a defective and unsafe condition to an improvement ends and just plain run-of-the-mill negligence begins. And here it's plain, Your Honors, I would submit that failure to close the bleeder valves, which the respondents did not change out, they did not work on, they did not improve, does not constitute a defective and unsafe condition to real estate, to a real estate improvement. Yes.
So, Mr. Bray,
You know, yes. I started looking at these cases, and there are a lot of cases on this issue, a lot of different factual scenarios, and the factual scenarios that are all over the map. So help us, if we're going to look, say, what's the case that we can most turn to and say, this is factually most like this, where we can say, well, did this arise out of that defective and unsafe condition and improvement?
That's a very good question. At pages 8 and 9 of my brief, I cite to a case called Brandt versus Hallwood Management Company. And in that case, what happened was the contractor's employees were installing, I believe, light receptacles and outlets. There was a wire that was left they left the wire on, in other words, and the appellant touched that wire and was injured by electric. He was electrocuted and was injured. What the court said there was, and I'm going to quote it just because I think this says it better than I could, why appellant was shocked was apparently the result of two factors. One, he was in contact with the conduit which operated as the ground, and two, he came into contact with the hot 277-volt electrical wire that REC, that's the contractor, failed to de-energize. Appellant does not claim that the conduit was defective and unsafe, but simply that REC failed to de-energize the electrical wire. There is no claim, and there is no evidence to support such a claim, that appellant's injuries arose out of the installation of any light fixtures or other improvement made by REC. And I think this is the kicker. Where an item does not permanently alter real property, it may not constitute an improvement, and injuries arising from the item are not time-barred by the statute. Now here, I'm not going to argue that the furnace was not an improvement to real property. It was. What I'm stating is that the item, or items, which is to say the bleeder valves, were the instrumentality of what caused the damages to the appellant's home.
But wasn't that case, I'm sorry, go ahead and finish your sentence. And
that's all right. And since those were original to the home, not replaced, not even worked on, but simply just refilled with water, they're not a permanent alteration or addition to the real property. They were already there. Therefore, they're not an improvement to the real property.
And I understand what you're saying about the difference between things that are already there and what's an improvement, but wasn't Brandt really focused on what's demolition work as opposed to something that's an improvement? I read that as kind of the thrust of that case, but I understand there is that language there that you quoted.
That may have been the thrust of the case, but I think the court's instruction as to what constitutes an improvement and what doesn't constitute an improvement and it constitutes pure negligence is very instructive. And that's why I'm relying heavily on that case.
And these valves are only on the radiators, not on the boiler.
You know, Your Honor, I'm not a plumber. I don't know the answer to that question, but I believe that is true. And whether it's true or not may constitute something that the trial court may want to re-explore on remand if the case is remanded back to the trial court. That could constitute a fact issue. I just don't think we have enough of a factual record to know that. Indeed, when you take a look at the finding by the court, it said that because it's part of a system, that means the whole thing constitutes an improvement. And I think that that approach has been rejected by courts, and I haven't found a decision that says that. The only, and I would cite the court to a new case from the Supreme Court. That's the Great Northern case, and that's cited in my brief. And I know that the respondent is going to claim that that's a new argument. I don't believe it's a new argument. It's new law, and I'm not making the argument because it's new. I'm just using it as an illustrative argument. That is to say, as a distinction between the actual improvement, which is the furnace, and the instrumentality of what caused the damage, which is to say the unsealed bleeder valves. And in that case, the Northern insurance case, what happened was there was an air intake valve or an air intake item installed in a property, and it malfunctioned. I think it caused a fire, in fact. And the issue was whether that was an improvement to real property, or did it fall under the exception, which is the machinery or equipment exception, which is at 1E to that statute, meaning that it is not governed by the two-year statute. And in that case, the court determined that that air exchange unit was machinery or equipment and therefore was not covered by the two-year statute of limitations. And here, I think it's an illustrative argument to make. Here, I think that even assuming that the furnace, which was the improvement, was the instrumentality of what caused the damages, and it is not, that it wouldn't even be covered by the two-year statute, but under that the new law, it would be covered by a different statute of limitations.
So is your primary argument that this was not a defect or that it was not an improvement?
Both. This claim did not arise out of the defective and unsafe condition to an improvement to real property. Number one, the instrumentality that caused the damages was not an improvement because it was pre-existing and original to the home. Secondly, there is nothing in this record that demonstrates that anything was defective or unsafe. The furnace is not and was not defective and unsafe. It works just fine. The radiators are not defective and unsafe. They worked as they're supposed to work. The bleeder valves on the radiators are not defective and unsafe because they did exactly what they're supposed to do. If they're open, water comes out. If they're closed, water stays in. So I'm struggling to ascertain what exactly would be defective or unsafe about something that works exactly the way it was supposed to work.
The statute refers to a condition, and having the valves in the wrong orientation would be a condition, wouldn't it?
It might constitute a condition, but my argument is that it certainly is not a defective and unsafe condition, and it's not an improvement anyway.
So what about the, I think it was, and as I said, I know there are a lot of cases in this area, Greibel versus Anderson Corporation, it dealt with, I think it was patio door, where the court said, look, unsafe also means insecure. So couldn't that apply here, that these bleeder valves were insecure?
No. In that case, the door was one of the improvements that the contractor installed into the real estate here. The bleeder valves are existing. I know I sound like a broken record, but I can't help it. The bleeder valves are original to the home, and they were not installed by the contractor. So you have the instrumentality of the harm being the screen door, which was something that the contractor worked on. And here you have the instrumentality, which is original to the home. So they're very distinct from one another.
Would you agree that the boiler is an improvement?
Oh, I agree that the boiler is an improvement. I think that if only the boiler were at issue, though, I think Subdivision 1E would apply, and that would be an exception to the two-year statute anyway.
Do we know, well, who opened up the bleeder valves and why? Do we know?
That's not part of the record. What I'm surmising, and this is only speculation, Your Honor.
I'll take it.
Is that, I'll take it. Okay,
at least I'll take it and think about it, but not that I'll take it and swallow it.
I think that the full record ought to be known here. That's one of the reasons that we engaged in this appeal. We don't know who opened them up to begin with. I suspect the contractor opened them up to drain the water out of the system when they put the furnace in the first place. But I don't know that for a fact.
I think it's a boiler, not a furnace.
I'm conflating the two. You're right. It's a boiler.
In my personal experience, I think when replacing a boiler, I thought all the water was drained out in the basement at the bottom. It was not necessary to open up the bleeder valves of each radiator, but I'm not sure about that.
Neither am I, Your Honor.
I had thought the bleeder valves might need to be open when draining it just to allow the ventilation for the air to flow out of the radiators. Yeah. But again, none of us seem to be experts in the field. Maybe Judge Jessen has some expertise she can offer. No? We're stuck with the record.
Yeah, and I think the record is incomplete, and what we have here might need some fleshing out.
Would you agree that the valves were left in an unsafe condition? As I bifurcate your argument, it seems like you're saying that this, whatever happened here, didn't arise out of the improvement, even if part of the process in completing the improvement and installing the boiler, there was an unsafe condition. The valves were left in an unsafe condition themselves, just they aren't part of the improvement. I take it your argument goes further than that, but you're not willing
it
to concede.
It goes further than that. I'm not willing to concede that point because whether the valves are open or closed, it depends on what you want the valves to do. Do you want water to come out or do you want it to stay in?
Well, presumably when you're putting water back into the system, it's not safe to leave the valves open. The case proves that. So they were in an unsafe condition. It was defective for the defective condition or an unsafe condition because of the result and because the valves didn't serve the function they were supposed to.
I would disagree with that. Okay. Because the valves worked exactly the way they were supposed to work. And I would distinguish this from...
Are you suggesting that, I mean, the valves work the way they were supposed to work, which means they're not defective. But do you think that word, how would we interpret this term, unsafe condition?
I would submit that leaving the valves open was negligence, but that doesn't mean it's unsafe or defective. And if we're going to conclude that leaving valves open that causes flooding means that it arises out of a defective and unsafe condition to an improvement to real property, that obliterates any distinction between cases that are under the two-year statute and cases which deservedly fall outside the two-year statute that are really, for lack of a better way of putting it, pure negligence type cases.
Well, let's assume that in this case, instead of installing a boiler, the project was to install new radiators, and the valves were not set properly. I gather from your argument, because the valves in that circumstance would not be defective, that the same, you'd have the same argument that you're making today.
I would probably make the same argument, but I would not contest whether the new furnaces were an improvement to real property or not.
But I thought your argument was there was no defect because the valves were operating in the way they were supposed to. They just weren't oriented correctly.
That's true. I would still make that argument in this fact scenario that you brought up. But I would not argue that the instrumentality of the damages was not an improvement.
Okay, so
and here
that,
today I am arguing.
So in that circumstance, you're saying this statute wouldn't apply. If the improvement is I want you to replace all the radiators in the home, and all of the radiators are replaced, and the boiler is recharged and with water and turned back on, and the house floods, your argument is, well, that's not a defect.
My argument would be that that's not a defective and unsafe condition to an improvement to real property. My argument is not that it's not an improvement. My argument would be that it worked exactly the way it was supposed to. If you leave it open, that's negligent, but it's not a defective and unsafe condition.
So you're saying that defective, you're putting emphasis on the conjunctive phraseology. It's defective and unsafe, and that if it's not defective, but it's just left in an unsafe condition, you're saying that the statute is not triggered.
I'm also saying that I don't believe that the condition that the bleeder valves were left in is unsafe.
No, I understand that, but I just want to understand your interpretation of the statute.
Okay. Defective and unsafe,
you're saying, are conjunctive, and they both have to be operative in order for the statute to be triggered. Is that right?
I am making that argument, even though there is some case law that suggests that that approach is incorrect.
That it's disjunctive.
Right. Even though that misreads the statute, I mean, the word and has a different meaning than or. And my argument is also that simply we're not dealing with an improvement to real property. The instrumentality causing the damage was something that was aside from the actual improvement. And I'm out of time, unless you have other questions.
I think not. You will have 5 minutes of rebuttal time if you choose to use
that. Thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for respondent.
Thank you.
May it please the court, counsel. My name is Nicole Winand, and I have the great privilege of representing respondent All Service Plumbing LLC in this matter. The trial court got it right and should be affirmed. My client, by performing an improvement to real property, or was performing an improvement to real property by installing a boiler in the appellant's property. That is not disputed. In order to function, in order for that boiler to function, the system to which it was connected needed to be refilled with water. That is also not disputed. It is alleged my client refilled the system negligently and therefore performed a negligent improvement to real property. Therefore, this case arises out of a defective and unsafe condition of that improvement, to wit, the open bleeder valves. Section 541.04, subdivision 1A, is a perfect fit to the fact scenario of this case.
What if, I'm going to change the facts a little bit for a hypothetical, if you don't mind my jumping in here. What if the in this case, instead of the water leaking, you had the power was shut off in order to install the boiler, the electrical components of the boiler? Would your position be that if the power was improperly left off or turned on, that any harm that results from that would also be harm arising out of the defective and unsafe condition of an improvement?
Yes, Your Honor, and the reason being that if, in fact, it was necessary to turn off the power in order to effectuate the scope of work for which my client was hired, then it would be part and parcel of the improvement to real property, if, in fact, that condition were allegedly a cause of some damage.
How far does that go? I mean, what if a contractor shows up to install the boiler and deems it necessary to air out the house for whatever reason? Assume there's a gas component, and so the house is aired out, but a window is left open, and there's significant water damage from the window being left open. How far do you go before you leave the improvement and get into something so tangential that it is not a defective or unsafe condition of the improvement?
You go as far as the scope of the work. If the scope of the work required the property to be aired out and therefore the windows open, then it is included as an improvement to real property.
Now, the statute, the problem with your argument is that, and this is where I'm trying to find that line too, the statute doesn't say arising out of the installation of an improvement, but it's out of a defective or unsafe condition of the improvement itself. And I guess it's that preposition of where I think Mr. Bray's argument has some gravity, and perhaps you can address your argument there and disabuse me of my presumption.
The improvement itself would include anything that a contractor is on the property to do in order to make the property more useful. In this case, my client, in order to install the boiler, had to, in order to make it function, turn on the water, run the water through the system. It was part and parcel of the improvement because the boiler does not make the property useful unless it works. And the boiler cannot work unless the system is filled back up with water. Now, there was a question posed about whether my client's employees opened the valve themselves or just left them open without closing. Really, there's no difference there, and it still would fit within the statute, regardless the case. The reason being, negligence is based on an act or an omission. If, in fact, my client opened the bleeder valves that were closed when he or she got on the property, that would be an act. If, in fact, my client just left them open and should have closed them so that the water did not flow out of the radiator when the system was refilled, that would be an omission. It really makes no difference whether, you know, which is the case.
Ms. Winan, am I correct? Your argument depends on the premise that the bleeder valves or the radiators are an improvement or the improvement in the case?
The improvement is the provision of heat to this home. So how do we provide heat to this home?
But okay, let me stop you there. I mean, I think improvement is a noun, and I think it's a thing, not the provision of a service, or it's not an act. I mean, you earlier said in your opening argument that your client performed an improvement. I think they might have constructed an improvement. I mean, I think the statute talks about, uses the word construction in the statute, but when you're talking about an action, aren't you then essentially talking about the case as if it were a case of negligent conduct?
Of course it's a case of negligence. It's specifically what the statute says. No action by any person in tort, which is negligence, to recover damages for an injury to property, which is what we're talking about, flood damage, arising out of the defective and unsafe condition of an improvement to real property. So an improvement is a noun, that's true. It is a thing, but in order to improve property, you have to do something, and that is performing instruction. Any person performing construction of the improvement to real property. So what is the construction? What construction did my client perform to improve the property? The construction included refilling the system, as is clearly alleged in the appellant's complaint.
And refilling is an action, right?
Performing is also an action, Your Honor. The statute says, shall be brought against any person performing construction of the improvement to real property. And so performing the construction would include either leaving the valves closed, if in fact they were open by somebody else, or closing the valves. And so that is part of performing the construction that my client was hired to do. Everyone agrees that that construction was an improvement to real property. There is no dispute there because it made the house more useful.
I hadn't originally intended to ask about this, but I think now your answer, I'm looking at the statute. You're right. It says performing, and then there's a phrase, then there's the word or, and it says performing or furnishing the design, planning, supervision, materials, or observation of construction, or construction of the improvement. I just want to note that. If you're relying on the word performing, I think you have to performing or furnishing one of those functions that follows: design, planning, supervision, materials, or observation, but not the construction itself, which is in the second part of the disjunctive sentence. Anyway, but why don't you proceed?
Thank you, Your Honor. I'm not sure under that interpretation that the statute would make sense, because what does construction of the improvement to real property go with then, if not performing or furnishing? The statute says any person, and then if we take out performing or furnishing the design, planning, supervision, materials, or observation of construction, what does construction of the improvement to real property mean?
I see your point. I think that's a good point. Perhaps performing or furnishing is, perhaps there's two disjunctive phrases that follow. Okay, thank you.
So I have a two-part question for you. I mean, my first is a question I'd just like you to address, because just, as someone who has a lot of radiators in her home, I just question how, you know, radiator bleeder valves can constitute a defective and unsafe condition. And if I think that's a close call, this is my second part of my question, as I understand it, your client has the burden of establishing that 2-year statute of limitation. It's an affirmative defense. So if it's a close call, how do I weigh in the fact that this is your burden of establishing?
To the first question, yes, of course, open bleeder valves left open during the refilling of a system necessary to make the boiler work is an unsafe and defective condition. Your Honor,
so
Ross,
you have to get to the negligence. You have to get to the negligence to decide whether it's unsafe. You have to get to what the employee did or didn't do.
So the first part of the statute requires that the claim be one of breach of contract, tort, or otherwise. So yes, that's step one. The claim has to be negligence. Step two, it needs to be an improvement to real property. Step three, it has to arise out of the defective and unsafe condition of that improvement. So yes, it is a defective and unsafe condition. As I was saying, Judge Ross very aptly put that the very fact that the damages alleged here, because the bleeder valves were open and solely because the bleeder valves were open, is flooding. This structure flooded. How flooding cannot be unsafe is beyond me. I think we don't have to go any further than the facts of the case and the damages alleged to know that this was an unsafe or defective condition. At A14 through A15 of the trial court's opinion, which is part of the addendum, Judge Hilden goes through a very nice summation of the waterfront, he says, of conditions this court and the Supreme Court both have considered to be defective and unsafe. A patio door that allows flies into the home, windows that are intended to be opaque that allow light, and a dike that caused flooding.
Now, in each of those, each of those cases, it's clear on your point about defective and unsafe condition. But in each of those cases, I believe the court was dealing with the actual improvement being the thing that what you were referring to there. And do you agree that this appeal hangs on how broadly or narrowly we interpret the term improvement?
I think improvement is in it should be given its plain meaning.
No, I understand and that. But you agree that this case, our decision is going to hang necessarily on whether you are correct that improvement is broadly construed, or whether Mr. Bray is correct that under this statute, improvement is specifically regarded.
Mr. Bray's interpretation would add language to the statute that does not exist.
No, I understand that. I just want to get a general sense that that there's nothing really lingering out there, that this case hangs entirely on whether your interpretation or his interpretation of the term improvement carries the day.
Improvement does not need interpretation because the statute is clear, Your Honor. The statute is clear that an improvement and the case law that interprets it is something that makes property more useful. And so using that definition, in order for the boiler to work, even though that is the instrumentality that was actually installed, in order for it to function and actually improve the property, the system has to be refilled. And the claim is that the system was refilled negligently and that negligence arises from the defective and unsafe condition of open bleeder valves that allowed water to flow throughout this property, allegedly, and flood it. And so I don't think there needs to be any interpretation of the statute. It's very clear and should be given its plain meaning.
Mr. Bray makes the same point. He just comes to a different conclusion as to what that meaning is.
And his conclusion is not supported by the case law and the precedent of this court or the Supreme Court. And I see my time is up, unless you have other questions. I did not get to address the second part of Judge Jessen's question, and so if you would like me to, I'd be happy to.
Well,
otherwise,
yes.
I can.
If you feel that you have not answered her question thoroughly or completely, because we've taken you off track, please feel free to summarize briefly and answer her question.
The second part of her two-part question was if this is a close call, since the burden of proof is mine, how do we reconcile that? Whether a bleeder valve is defective or unsafe is not a close call, first of all. And if it were a close call, I think that the precedent requires that the facts be interpreted in the light most favorable to the opposing party. There are no facts that support Mr. Bray's argument to make this a close call. There are no cases on point to Mr. Bray's argument to make this a close call. The court has consistently and regularly determined, as was stated in the Geisler decision, or Grebel, I'm sorry, G-R-I-E-B-E-L, the Anderson, where something fails to provide expected security against unwanted elements, it is an unsafe or defective condition. And thank you.
Thank you. Counsel for appellant, you have 5 minutes of rebuttal time.
Thank you. Setting aside the issue as to whether there was a defective and unsafe condition to an improvement to real estate, I'd like to focus a little bit on what constitutes an improvement. I believe that counsel's argument grossly overstates what an improvement means within the meaning of Section 54105. And I would cite once again to the case of Brandt versus Hallwood Management. There, here's what the court stated with respect to an improvement. It says, because the pre-existing conduit, or the electrical wire for that matter, appears to have existed from the time the building was constructed, it cannot constitute an improvement to the property. Thus, it cannot be said that appellant's injuries arose out of an improvement to real property. And I understand that that case also involved some demolition property, but it also involved some electrical work. And what the court there is saying is an improvement to real estate must involve something that you're in addition to the property, that alters it permanently. That's what the definition of an improvement means for purposes of this section. And there is no case that says that if you do not work on something, you do not make a permanent addition or an alteration, that it constitutes an improvement. And here we know that the bleeder valves are original. Here we know that the radiators are original to the home. I don't think unfairly parsing the improvement, which is the installation of the boiler, from the other work that was necessary to get the boiler working, because the other work is not an addition or alteration permanently to the property that improved it. Only the furnace was. Adding water, I don't know that there's any case law or authority for the proposition that adding water is a permanent alteration or addition to the property. One other thing I'd like to point out is, and I completely forgot because I got sidetracked, is the case of Alliance Insurance Company versus PM Services of Eden Prairie, and I believe that's cited in my brief. That could superficially be interpreted to suggest that, well, if you're installing water systems, that it constitutes an improvement to property. But in that case, what happened was the contractor installed a water purification system, which I would concede is an improvement to real property. What they did is they installed T-valves on the inside of the building, and the T-valves were over-tightened. And because the T-valves were over-tightened, they leaked and flooded the building. That case clearly showed that the improvement to the property was the instrumentality of the damages. Here, we don't have that at all. I think this is easily distinguishable from the wide variety of cases out there in which we're not dealing with the instrumentality of the improvement itself causing the problem. And the improvement itself was not causing any of the issues. So I have nothing further unless you have questions.
It appears not. Thank you.
All right. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Bray. Ms. Winan, the matter is submitted, well briefed, and well argued today. We appreciate you appearing by interactive video. Matter is submitted.
Thank you.
And we will issue our opinion within the statutory period. Thank you.